Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and thank you for joining me on the English program. I'm Linda Bordoni, and here's a taste of what we'll be talking about today. Pope Benedict XVI focuses his message for World Communications Day on the emergence of the internet as a network for communication. The General Secretary of the World Council of Churches speaks of his vision for the ecumenical movement. The well-known author and philanthropist Dominique Lapierre talks about his new book and his mission to help the poorest of the poor in the slums of Calcutta. And Thou Shalt Not Kill, Father Jim Brand examines commandment number 5. Entire networks of friends, chat rooms open all day and night, instant news and entertainment on our phones, iPods or iPads. There's no doubt that with all the latest digital technology, we're more connected than ever before. Yet paradoxically, many experts say we're now less able to communicate and more lonely, searching for some kind of real meaning in our lives. That's why Pope Benedict XVI's message for this year's World Communications Day is entitled Truth, Proclamation and Authenticity of Life in the Digital Age, calling for a creative and responsible use of the latest technologies in order to communicate the lasting truth of God's love for the world. The Pope's message was released on Monday, and it notes all the positive developments offered by the new media, which at the same time, however, demand a serious reflection on the true significance of communication. Archbishop Claudio Celli heads the Pontifical Council for Social Communications, which is responsible for helping the Pope draw up this annual message. He told Philippa Hitchin that in his message, Pope Benedict expresses the great positive aspects offered to the human being today to communicate.
Archbishop Celli, the message for this year's World Day of Communications, Truth, Proclamation and Authenticity of Life in the Digital Age. Can you tell us, first of all, why the choice of this theme for this year?
As you know, during the past years, the Holy Father, through his message, was touching other aspects of communication. And I think that this year is really underlining some fundamental aspects of communication itself. Because again and again, the Holy Father is recalling us that communication is an action, an activity of the human person to communicate with other human persons. And certainly in such a communication, the human person must be a real human person. And this is why the Holy Father is inviting to be authentic and following the truth. And so I think that in this way, we are invited to recall and to rediscover the real source of our communication. And this is for every human communication. Why? Because today, for example, there is the great danger, I would say, that we are talking, but without giving a real, serious human content. And we need instead to make that my human person, my human being, is present in my communication activity. And you can perceive also that the Holy Father is touching when the human person is accepting in his heart the gospel. And for sure is rediscovering that also here there is a Christian authenticity. And the Holy Father is talking about a Christian style of communication.
The words he uses, he talks about respectful and discreet Christian presence, doesn't he?
Exactly. There is an attitude. Also when I am announcing, I am proclaiming the gospel, this must be done always with a great respect for the other person who is listening, who is receiving the message. You know, it is not an assault, I would say, a strong activity. It must be strong as a moment of witness, but must always be discreet as the activity of Jesus.
And yet the difficulty today in internet, in this world which has so many different and confusing sites and places for people to go, it's very difficult to make the church's voice heard.
It is true. This is why also we are trying to find new ways to be present. We think that today the human being needs such a truth, because in his heart there is a perennial longing for truth, I would say for happiness too. But today, through this message, we are rediscovering that there is a Christian style when we approach the world of communication. There is faithfulness to truth. There is authenticity in my human being. There is a way of a discreet and respectful approach. Certainly not hiding what is the truth of the gospel. Not hiding the real values. Not looking for popularity. But certainly giving witness to Jesus, I would say. And so really this message is touching real, deep problems of communication today. But I would say that the message of the Holy Father is positive. Again and again, I'm accustomed to underline that we know the difficulties and the dangers of the web or of the net, but we think that also today the message of the Holy Father is appreciating the great possibilities that the net is offering to the human being for the full development of its personality, to increase a dialogue with other people, to increase such a human relationship with others. And I think that this is new ways that are offered to the human person to increase its capacity to talk with everybody, to be in communion with everybody, and to open the limits of the boundaries of the country and so on and so on. And so I think that the Holy Father is expressing in this message this great positive aspects offered to the human being today to communicate.
Is it true that alongside this message you're also working on a kind of style guide, a document that will suggest ways of communicating on internet as a guide to those many, even Catholic sites, that are not really respectful and discreet?
It is true. I think that such a message is an invitation to reconsider our way, how we are present in the internet. And I think that here the Holy Father is indicating us some attitudes that are, I think, according also to his personal position. The Holy Father is a man of a clear mind and a clear vision, so deeply connected and rooted in the gospel faith, in the gospel truth. But also the Holy Father is underlining the way how we approach people, such a discreet and respectful approach. And I think that these are main guidelines how people in the church has to communicate with the world today.
That was Archbishop Claudio Celli, President of the Pontifical Council for Social Communications. One of the most significant events during the ongoing annual week of prayer for Christian unity here in Rome is a lecture given by guest speakers at the Centro Pro Unione. The encounter takes place in the same room where bishops and lay experts gathered during the Second Vatican Council to draw up the decree on ecumenism, Unitatis Redintegratio. The guest speaker last Thursday was the General Secretary of the World Council of Churches, Reverend Dr. Olav Fikse-Tveit, who talked of the need for a greater spirit of mutual accountability among the different Christian communities. Following the lecture, Dr. Fikse-Tveit spoke with Philippa Hitchin about his vision for the ecumenical movement and about the importance of the Church in Jerusalem as a model for dialogue amongst all people of faith.
The Pontifical Council for Christian Unity has been working on this process called harvesting the fruits. Mm. You were talking today about planning or planting for the next season. Mm. Can you talk to us a little bit about your views, your plans for the next season of the ecumenical movement?
Well, there is always a time of planting seeds in the ecumenical movement. But for me, as we now use these images of different seasons, it is also important to say we not only have a harvest or a winter, but there is also a time now to prepare for the next spring. I think that we see, for example, when you look at the younger generations, they partly don't really understand the confessional division that has been following the churches now for centuries. Secondly, many of those who are actively involved in the church in those generations have a strong focus on why they are church and the mission of the church, whether they are evangelicals or Protestants or Orthodox or Catholics. And I see in this what I find a hopeful development, that we can focus more together on the mission of the church in the world, whether we focus on the global issues we have to deal with together or the local challenges. I think also that we now can plant seeds in terms of we are willing to work together in many of the issues that have been seen as reserved, for example, for the World Council of Churches. All churches now talk about how shall we respond to the climate changes. And in this, I see seeds of doing something together that really is more than just common action. It is also really a deeper understanding of this is God's world, we are here to steward it together and bring a joint Christian witness to how we can do it.
This is, however, a time of financial crisis, and you mentioned the effect that this is having on the ecumenical movement itself.
Mm. Yeah, it has an effect on the churches, of course, because there are less funds available for many of them and less funds available for external projects like supporting institutions like the World Council of Churches. That doesn't mean that the call to be one and the need for focusing on how we do things together is less. I would say also the financial crisis in a way calls us to be stewarding our resources well. One way to deal with this is, of course, saying in the WCC that we don't do things that others are doing. Or when we are doing something, we should do it together with the churches or other partners who are also involved in this kind of work. So maybe also the financial crisis can help us to make sure that we don't duplicate our work, that we also find ways to get synergies in what we're doing.
We're focusing on the churches in Jerusalem during this week of prayer for Christian unity. You see Jerusalem, the church in Jerusalem, as central to the mission, to the goal of our ecumenical movement, don't you?
Yeah, I try to say that it is both a source of our unity. What we have together are the gifts coming from Jerusalem, from Jesus Christ, from how God has revealed himself to all of us through what happened in Jerusalem. But it is also a matrix of what we are called to do. We are called to witness together for peace. We are called to find ways of expressing our unity in the place where we live, whether it is in Jerusalem or other places, as different churches. But we are also called to find ways to live together with peoples of other faith. so that Jerusalem can be a city of peace, but also our own places, wherever we are, could be places of peace. So therefore, I think it's Jerusalem is, it is more than a symbol. It is also a real place, for a holy place for us as Christians. And it should be, we hope, an inspiration for us and for our cooperation with peoples of other faith.
Finally, your wish, your message for this week of prayer for Christian unity.
The most important thing we can do as Christians is to pray, because we then commit ourselves to God and to one another. And I think this prayer, based on the inspiration from the churches in Jerusalem this year, reminds us that whatever we do as Christians, we do it based on the gifts we have received from God, in a way also from Jerusalem.
That was the General Secretary of the World Council of Churches, Reverend Dr. Olav Fixit-Feit. Dominique Lapierre has touched many people through his life and work. His first taste of fame followed the summer when he was 17 years old and left Paris with $30, worked aboard a ship, disembarked in the United States, and managed a 30,000-mile jaunt around North America. This adventure led to Lapierre's first best-selling book, A Dollar for 1,000 Miles. Since then, he has continuously searched for new messages and stories. Mr. Lapierre was recently here at Vatican Radio. He spoke to Lydia O'Kane about his latest book, India Mon Amour, and about his ongoing work to help the poorest of the poor in the slums of Calcutta.
My new book now, which just came out in Italy, is called India Mon Amour, which means India, my love. It's really the stories that I have accumulated during 50 years of trips and writing about India. I'm the co-author with Larry Collins of a famous book about India called Freedom at Midnight. And then I wrote another book called The City of Joy, which is a cult book which sold 9 million copies and has made it into a big film by Roland Joffé. And since I've written City of Joy, I've given all my royalties to start humanitarian actions for the poorest of the poor in the slums of Calcutta and also in rural areas of Bengal and India.
His inspiration to do so, Dominique Lapierre explained, came from none other than Mother Teresa of Calcutta.
One day I went to see Mother Teresa in Calcutta and I said to her, I have $50,000 in my pocket, Mother, to give it to an institution which cares with leper children. And she looked at me with her little eyes so full of love and she says, this is God who sends you. And she introduced me to an Englishman who used to be a haberdasher in London. He had a nice Jaguar, a nice house, a nice store. And one day he had been in Calcutta and he had been so impressed by the poverty that he had discovered that he had gone back to India with all his belongings, a little attaché case full of sterling pounds, and he had opened a home to save leper children. But when I arrived in India, that was 30 years ago, he had no more money to continue to sustain his home, which he had called Resurrection. And I was so impressed by what this Englishman was doing for the poorest of the poor that I gave him our $50,000 that my wife and I we had brought. And we said to him an extravagant thing. We said to him, you'll never close your home, Resurrection. And this was the beginning of a humanitarian action with the royalties of my books that today supports 14 centers with schools, refuges, microcredit distributions, hospital boards. I have dug 600 tube wells of drinking water in very poor villages of Bengal. And I'm very happy to tell this whole story now through a book. The world premiere is in Italy, India Mon Amour. But then the book will be translated in English, in French, in Spanish, everywhere in the world. And it just tells in a very simple way how can someone change the life of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people.
And 2 years ago, Mr. Lapierre says, he was awarded the highest Indian civil decoration.
It's called the Padma Bhushan, which means the ornament of the lotus. This decoration was given to me by the president of the country, who's a woman, president of a country of 1,200,000,000 people. And it had been requested by 50,000 children from rural areas of Bengal who wanted their brother, Dominic, to receive the highest civil decoration from India. It's never given to a foreigner. It's the official recognition, in a sense, of the crusade that I've been leading.
And for his visit to Vatican Radio, Dominique Lapierre had even brought with him a small but significant gift, so as never to forget the voice of those who have nothing.
Today I've brought you a little memory from India, which I call my phone, my cellular phone from Calcutta. This bell is the bell of a rickshaw puller, a slave man who pulls in a little cart other people in Calcutta. They are the taxis of Calcutta. And one of them, who became my great friend, gave me his little bell, which is in a sense his klaxon, to introduce himself into the traffic of Calcutta. And I always have this little bell in my pocket, because wherever I travel in the big Western world, I can hear the voice in my pocket of those who have nothing and who yet seems to have everything, because they stand on their feet and they beat adversity.
You sound like a person that many people would think, gosh, how can I do something to help somebody else? How can I? Your book sounds like a book that's saying you can, if you put your mind to it, that if you can help somebody else, or you can do whatever you want once you set your mind to doing it.
Yeah, that's what Mother Teresa said. I think that now in the present, that if anybody buys, for instance, India Mon Amour, the royalties go to Calcutta for emergency priorities. Also, if you buy it on the net, €1 go automatically to the foundation that I've created to serve the people I serve in Calcutta and also in rural areas of Bengal. And as I think, you know, it's always to be alerted. Madre Teresa used to say always, we can all contribute to change things. She said, saving one child is saving the world. I am fortunate enough to be able to say that I am saving the world every day, many times, with all those children that I take care of. But we can also, we don't have to go to Calcutta. Right here in Milano, in Vaticano, in America, in France, it's possible to save many people. Madre Teresa used to say, you know, you have one big disease in your rich Western world, which is worse than our leprosy in India. This leprosy is called solitude. So many people never receive the sign of a fraternal hand. And that's something that we can contribute to change.
One final question, just regarding the country of India. Is it a country that inspires you?
Well, of course, it's a mosaic of races. It's a monument country, 1,200,000,000 people, where they speak 700 languages, where they adore 20 million divinities. It's an extraordinary. I never cease to marvel. I never cease to discover new things, in spite of the fact that I've been going to India for 50 years. But it's also a country which has taught me that everything which is not given is lost. This proverb I've learned in a place that I call the City of Joy, one of the worst slum on our planet.
And finally, just for people who want to find out more, there's also the book, but there's also www.indiamonamour.it if you want to find out more about this new book. Thank you so much for talking to
us.
It's a real pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. Bless you. Thank you.
And now Father Jim Brown reflects on all the implications of the fifth commandment. Thou shall not kill.
Hello. My name is Father Jim, and at the moment I'm thinking of some of the commandments that God has given us. I see the commandments as the house rules of heaven. They're good for us because they're good for God. And all the commandments are different ways of trying to say the same thing, how to be like God. I mentioned before, I think, that if in this life we've learnt the three words you and I, we will have learnt the family language of the Trinity, Father and Son. And when we reach heaven, we won't have to go to a school of languages called purgatory to learn the family language. Well, if we've managed to learn the commandments, when we reach heaven, we'll feel at home and won't have to go to a reformatory school called purgatory to learn manners. Now, there are over 600 commandments in the Old Testament, and these are all ways of trying to say the same thing, how to become like God. Like father, like sons and daughters. So I'm going to look now at the fifth commandment, thou shalt not kill. Our Lord said, I came that they may have life and have it to the full. And if we're going to be his brothers and sisters, it's worth asking ourselves, are we life givers? When I was a child, I thought, no, fifth commandment, haven't murdered anyone this week, next. Or somebody might say, yes, I've been to confession, murdered my granny last week, and haven't done any this week, next. It's not so much have I killed anyone directly, but am I a life giver? There are ways of putting people into decline very easily. Even if you don't kill them off immediately, you can help them deteriorate. Somebody cracks a joke, I crack a better one. That's you cut down to size. Somebody says they ran the mile in 4 minutes, and I say I ran it in three. Well, if you could see my shape, you know that was a lie for a start. We're very good at undermining people, squashing them, demeaning them, and not being life givers. So we have to say to ourselves, when I go by, do people feel better or do they feel worse? Do I pass them so quickly, like a fast motorboat, that they all feel seasick in my wake? Do I run so fast in life that I leave everyone behind and make them feel like slow coaches? Do I flaunt myself with my brilliance in front of people and make them feel stupid? Our Lord washed people's feet. He approached them from the feet upwards so that they would feel that they're standing tall. O Lord, teach me to be a life giver by complimenting people, as I mentioned in the Annunciation, by recognizing them, by respecting them. And you'll find that some people who went round all rolled up like a hedgehog suddenly start unfolding themselves and aware of their dignity. Amen.
You're listening to Vatican Radio's English program. Laudetur Jesus Christus.